Hey, welcome to the List Film Podcast. Yeah, excited. All about it. For the new listeners, I am Ricardo, one of your hosts.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
I'm Kevin.
And we are a weekly podcast, and we pick a topic of a film topic, and then we list our top five films, our top five favorite films belonging to that topic. And what we're talking about today is our favorite documentaries, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Correct. All right.
Just making sure we're on the same page. Yeah. So we're going to talk about our favorite documentaries. But first, we're going to talk about some movies we've seen this week, last week. I guess we've all now seen Cabin in the Woods, so we can talk about it. Should we talk about it?
Probably, because it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Just pretty kind of awesome.
So, Maybe you guys keep up with us on Facebook or Twitter, but yeah, we lost our last week's episode. So last week we talked about it, but since the episode was lost, we'll talk about it again this week. I loved it. I think we all loved it, right?
Yes.
Everybody
yes.
in this table.
Yeah.
Kevin, you want to start off and say who's seen it the most times?
I think Kevin has.
Really? But you haven't seen it a second time?
I haven't been able to. I've been super busy.
Oof. And at the end of my second time, I almost decided to turn around and walk back in the theater. That's how good the movie is.
And not pay for it?
Maybe.
But yeah, I loved it. I thought it was like well acted, well executed, and
well written.
Yeah,
it was like well written.
Such a, it was like you couldn't have written a better love letter to horror films, or just like it was like the nicest gift to horror fans.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and like it wasn't like pandering. It wasn't anything. It wasn't like it was just if I can say it, it was like a perfect horror movie. Thriller, because it's not really a horror movie. It was like the perfect horror lover's dream.
Yeah, it's the perfect dissection of the genre.
Last R off of that.
Yeah.
It wasn't just me, right? It sounded like he said perfect horror lovers, right?
Yeah, yes. Horror lovers. If you love horrors, you're going to love this movie, guys. It's just so great.
The beginning of it is more horror, and then it turns into a thriller.
Yeah.
So it's still horror in it, too.
Yeah. There's a lot of horrors.
Horrors, lots of them.
Well, one for sure.
We see some titties.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It wouldn't have been a horror movie unless it was titties.
I just
and
like that Jenny was willing to point that out.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, just want to point out that we see for sure one pair.
Who knows if we see more. Yeah. Go see it and find out.
So yeah, I loved it. And Jenny, as our the only women in the group, what did you think? Like, I mean,
I loved it, but I love Joss Whedon. I love all things Joss Whedon. And it was just... It was really well written, mostly because of the one character. I can never remember how to say his name. Franz Kranz. That one.
Yeah.
He is just the epitome of. He's you.
He's
the audience. So. Every time that something stupid happens and you're like, what? Why did they just do that? He goes, are we serious? What are we doing here? Or whatever. Yeah. And so he voices the audience. And that was perfect because in every horror movie, there's always that part where you're like, don't go up the fucking stairs, you dumb bitch. And he actually like says that shit.
Yes,
so
yeah.
It's perfect. It's really funny. It's good.
Yeah. I just was... does he? Let me see. No. The only cliche they didn't do, and spoiler alert, is that they didn't kill the black guy first, or the minority first. If you really think about it. That would have been cool. They just would have done that.
He's not really black, is he?
Yeah, he's kind of not white.
Well, he's not white.
He's kind of not white.
Yeah. Not white.
If we were in the racial draft, he would not make, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at the genre as itself, the stereotypes that are in this movie are more common in horror films than the black guy dying first in a horror film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
right.
That's
you're
what
right.
they were going for.
The whore, the jock.
Yeah.
The whores.
The ones that have sex first.
Yeah.
The virgin, the fool.
I'm ruining everything. I'm sorry.
I know. What's up with
oh,
you?
Yeah, the virgin, the fool. What was he supposed to be? Oh, the
No, he was supposed to be the...
He's like a brainiac. He's the smart guy.
Yeah. So that's why it was like... That guy.
The intellectual.
The intellectual there, yeah.
Yeah. But no, great movie all around. And did you guys see anything else?
I saw a couple other movies.
What did you see?
So Pirates, Band of Misfits.
Oh, really? How was that? It was one of the movies I really wanted to see. I saw at Comic-Con.
I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
The voice, the cast who does all the voices is terrific.
Wasn't Hugh Grant one of them?
Hugh Grant is the main pirate.
Really?
And watching it, I'm going, is that fucking Hugh Grant? And it doesn't sound like him at all. All the other actors, you can kind of see them. But most of the time throughout the movie, you're going, is that really Hugh Grant? He does a great job of capturing the voice of that character. I would have to say, if I would have to choose between watching Wallace and Gromit again or Pirates, I would definitely sit down and watch Wallace and Gromit. I just become a kid again and just thoroughly enjoy watching those movies. But this is a really good, enjoyable movie, and I would definitely say go see it.
What about compared to like Chicken Run?
I would go watch Pirates over Chicken Run.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cool. And anything else that you saw?
5-Year Engagement.
How was that? Did you see that, Adam?
I did see that.
Okay.
There are some really, really good funny moments. Then there, I mean, the movie's too long. They need to.
It's an Apatow production.
Yeah,
you should just know that going in. It's going to be half an hour too long.
It is.
Not that I have anything wrong with any Apatow production. I'm just saying.
It's too long.
Even like they're really funny, but it's just like we don't. Yes, that was a funny joke, but we didn't need it. It's not pushing the story along. You're just making this a 2-hour-long comedy, and I don't need a 2-hour-long comedy.
Because there's some stuff that they kept pushing and pushing. It's like, this is just becoming awkward now. Can we just cut this? There's really no point to some of this stuff. And I could be out of here 20 minutes earlier. But the funny stuff is amazing. And the stuff between the two, I mean, the relationship stuff is great. And Emily Blunt does a fantastic job. And so does Jason Segel.
She's really funny.
She is. She's great.
I feel like if it had been shorter, I feel like Chris Pratt and Alison Brie could have stolen the movie.
Yes,
but since it's so long, it's like they're kind of diminished.
Yes, that's definitely balanced out.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I would say balanced out. I would just say that there's long gaps between the funny and like just editing things. Like, do I really need to see the seasons change 4 times?
Yeah, no.
Like just constant cutting to the seasons. I get it. The seasons are changing. Let's just move on. I understand how time works.
Oh, 5 years. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for showing us that.
But a lot of great, like Brian Posehn was funny. Chris Parnell was really funny.
Parnell was great. Yeah.
Reese Evans, I think, was really. I thought he was one of my favorite characters because he was just so.
He was. He played that character so well. I mean, he wasn't. I mean, he's playing the straight man. He's not being outrightly funny, but he just plays that character so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a funny guy.
I don't think we saw anything, did we?
I didn't see anything. No.
Just Cabin in the Woods. And
what would you guys rate or pay for Pirates and for 5-Year Engagement?
For Pirates I'd definitely pay $13-14 for it. And you know, I'd probably pay the same for 5-Year Engagement.
5-Year Engagement I do like a matinee.
Okay.
And then I also saw The Raven.
Oh.
I'm going to need a sec. Hold on.
Oh, no.
It was really bad.
Really?
Really?
It was really bad.
It looks really bad.
Imagine League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, God.
Minus the fun.
Oh,
God.
So a much less fun League of Extraordinary Gentlemen with really bad acting. And I feel like the last minute they came in like, hey, let's do a credit sequence at the end, like the beginning of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh.
With a song that doesn't fit. It was just...
Did it really have to be R? I mean, I feel like they might have been able to get more people to see it if it wasn't R.
The gory stuff is all that kept me going. I was like, all right, well, at least something bloody just happened. That was cool. Because, I mean, other than that, I was struggling to stay awake during this movie.
So it's just the gore, pretty much.
Yeah, it's just
the
gore. I think someone says fuck once. I think John Cusack says fuck one time.
Oh.
But yeah, like it's all wrong. I love John Cusack. Between him, John Cusack and gory bloody death scenes are why I kept watching the movie. And he seems to be enjoying himself, but he's just surrounded by these terrible actors.
Wow.
And then like
Brendan Gleeson.
He's in it. And it's just like, why couldn't they get more Brendan Gleesons and less whoever the fuck these other people are. It was just not good. It was so bad.
How was Elle's Eve?
Is she the blonde?
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrible. It's like watching someone hold up a Barbie doll and make it. Like talking for it. Like, oh, hello. I can emote without moving my face. Terrible. Has she made another stuff?
You should make a movie like that.
Just a Barbie doll. Actually, yeah. I've made a short. I filmed a short. My friend did a short with Barbie dolls. That was more entertaining than her performance.
Wow.
She like expresses nothing. Really, just cold.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because she really wanted to be on the podcast next week.
No.
I will tell this to her face. I'm like, what were you? Were you really high when you were doing this movie?
Do you want to act?
Let's someone up your dose of something. Because you're not really, except for one part where she screams, her face doesn't do anything. It's just like frozen in carbonite.
That's interesting, though. That she can act while she's frozen
in
carbonite.
She's trying not to get wrinkles.
I don't think that counts as acting. If you're not expressing any emotions.
Yeah. What about anything else? How much would you pay to see this?
I want my money back, and I didn't pay to see it.
Ouch.
Interesting.
I got paid to go see it. I want the time back.
Really?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
You won't be checking that one out then.
So I'll probably wait for to be on like TBS or something.
Yeah.
Why? Because I kind of wanted.
You could take a nap.
No.
Or something.
Okay, so compared to From Hell, how?
Oh, I'd take From Hell hands down.
Any day of the week.
Any day of the week, all the way through. All
right.
I'd watch From Hell, and then I'd watch From Hell with director's commentary if I didn't have to watch The Raven again.
Oh wow! So you're that deep into. Oh wow! All
and right. I don't like From Hell.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't mind it. Anything else you guys saw?
Nope.
No. Nope.
I watched some Bukowski films that Adam gave me, but those aren't new.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't really see anything. But this Thursday, we're going to go see The Avengers, so we'll talk about it next week. It's been getting good reviews, so I can't wait for it. See what happens.
And making boatloads of money.
I know, dude. I know. Damn it. I want some money. Does anybody have a stream of the week?
What was it? Oh, Melancholia is streaming right now.
Yes,
I think it's been streaming for a little bit. I don't know how much longer it's going to be on, but it is streaming.
It is streaming. Definitely check it out.
It's really good. It's very pretty.
Yeah.
Maybe watch something funny afterwards. Chappelle Show's on instant, so watch Melancholia and then follow it up with Chappelle Show. So
that's
you
a good idea.
Be laughing.
Yeah, or Bob's Burger. Have you guys seen Bob's
Burger?
Burger
is on there.
Just I love it, dude.
Yeah.
How many seasons are on Netflix of Bob's Burger?
Just one.
Oh, just one. Because we're currently
this
on
is
second
in season. Two? Okay.
Yeah. So. It's the first season. There's a lot of good episodes on there. The episode with Kevin Kline is really funny. He plays their landlord with an eye patch. But yeah, you should check it out. That so check out Melancholia. Then
something
scoot on over and go to Bob's Burger, and you know
because they're right next to each other.
Lighten your mood. Yeah, yeah.
Get on over.
So that is it for the stream of the week and our movie watching week. And now let's get to the list. And the list is documentaries. Did anybody have a hard time with this?
Kinda.
I had a little bit of a hard time. Still kind of moving things around. But yeah. So let's start off with Kevin and then see where we end up.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. Okay, so my number five is probably one of the earlier. I mean, because I didn't get into documentaries until after high school, some point in college. And it definitely pulled me in. I mean, even some of the film classes I took in college just made me go, I really don't want to watch documentary films. And this one's from 2001, and it's Dogtown and Z-Boys. Even though I have no coordination, I've always loved skateboarding, but I can't stand up on a skateboard and do it because I will fall on my ass. But I love watching skateboarders, and all the archival footage is terrific, just watching some of these guys do some experimentation. And just learning about how the sport kind of evolved, and it was because of this group and what they did on a board. I also love just seeing them in the past and how they're getting all this success, and then where some of them are in the future. Especially, I mean, Jay, who most people say was probably the most talented and gifted of the group, and kind of where he went in life is really interesting. But I mean, it's really entertaining. I love just learning about all of that. Sean Penn narrates, and he does a really good job of narrating.
And he was around that time, I think. He hung out with him and stuff because he was born and raised in Santa Monica. So.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I really like this. And, like, you know, they're talking about, what is it, Stacy Peralta?
Tony Alva.
Yeah.
And he's the one that made the movie, right?
Stacy is.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's cool just to then see how it then evolves into, the next group of people, and like you have Tony Hawk,
yeah,
and just kind of how these guys influence the next round of people, and how they just keep influencing people who skateboard today.
Yeah, yeah, and I feel like, I mean, you think skateboarding is like simple, like oh well, you do this and that, but I feel like every time I see like new skaters out, like I see like new things that oh I hadn't seen that, like even going back and seeing this documentary, it's like, oh wow, like nobody does that anymore. Nobody like does those tricks anymore, because they're like, so it's not even that they're simple, it's just that it's like from a generation past, and we don't do that anymore. We're down to more complex things, and it's not the fact that they're simple, it's just that they're different, I feel. But yeah, I really like this movie.
Well, I mean, just I'm watching the documentary and finding out where skateboarding started, how it was just they had competitions on a flat surface and you would just do these tricks. And then they were like, no, we're going to go fucking skate a swimming pool and do verts, and just seeing how they helped evolve the sport.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, just like even the boards themselves, how they evolved and how they were like skinny and small. And
they originally used clay wheels.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting documentary. I dig it.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It would meet the requirements that I put for my list, where I'm trying to stick with fun documentaries.
Okay.
Because I feel like with documentaries, it's easy to get really depressing really easily.
That's where the rest of my list goes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sweet. All right. Well, my list actually kind of rides the line between fun and depressing. It's even in the title. It's called Plagues and Pleasures on the Salton Sea.
Hmm.
And it's from 2004. And it's just... what's the best way to describe this movie? It's, I mean, if you don't know what the Salton Sea is, it was an accident. It was an engineering accident where all of this runoff ended up creating this body of water, this body of salt water. And they're like, oh, hey, well, let's use this and let's make it the French Riviera in the desert.
Yeah. And it's like, it's about 30 minutes past Palm Springs.
Yeah.
Heading, yeah, southeast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's just this really, it's high concentrated salt water, but it doesn't have any runoff. So it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And like it kills, at this point, it kills everything. Like they have huge fish die-offs and it corrodes boats that stay in the water. And it's just like this, it looks like a wasteland.
Yeah.
It looks like the apocalypse has already come to the Salton Sea. But people still live there. And some people love it. They think it's the greatest thing ever. And so this documentary, which is narrated by John Waters, is all about the community, the people who still live there, and about the history of the Salton Sea. And it's amazing. It's like John Waters directing, or John Waters narrating something directed by David Lynch.
It's
these
funny.
People who live at this, around this body of water.
My number five is, it's the same theme. It's the same subject, actually.
The Salton Sea?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
When we get to it, I'll explain. But yeah, no, I love this documentary. And I think watching that documentary inspired me to watch my number five. And,
okay.
But yeah, like, I visited this place, like, twice, and it is, it's the crazy, and also, like, you see, like, the salt, like, really tore down, like, these towns. Like, mm-hmm. there, you see, like, campers are, like, half eaten by the salt.
Well,
and,
the
like,
corrosion just from the water and from the, just, it's, like, the worst environment.
Oh yeah,
it's like watching. They could use it as a set for a Mad Max movie.
Oh yeah, 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 totally. Without doing anything, like you don't have to bring anything. You just bring the actors, and we're good to go.
And like, the problem with that though is the smell.
Oh yeah,
because like I've heard on a windy day you can smell the Salton Sea in Palm Springs.
I've been there a couple times, more than two times. And the first time I went, we got out of our car, started walking, and I hear like crunching on my feet. Like I'm like, it's like, ksh, 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 and I'm like, I look down and it's just the bones of dead fish that's covered the whole shore.
Yeah. Cause they have the huge die-offs where all of the fish die.
Yeah.
And then like the birds eat the bad fish and the birds get sick.
How do the fish get in there?
They put fish.
Yeah.
They put fish in the water. So it's like,
so that they die?
It's this perfect ecological circle of death.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, it will, because there'll be a huge die-off, and then the die-off creates this environment that helps the algae and everything grow in the water. And so when the algae grows, then more fish come because there's more algae for them. So they eat that. But then after all that algae is gone, all the fish have eaten it, then there's another die-off, and it just keeps happening and happening and happening.
Yep.
And people still live here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Huh.
And well, I'll talk about it a little more when I get to My Dog Mary. But yeah, it's so creepy, and oh man,
and it's like this weird, like white trash Florida. Like all of these retirees, these old retirees go there, and then you've got like lower, like
income,
poverty, low income people living there, talking about how there's nothing to do, and it's just this weird cross section of the world. And some of them love it, some of them hate it. Some of them talk about how, like, oh, yeah, we go swimming in it. It's no big deal. We eat the fish. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, well, if you eat that fish, you're going to get botulism.
They go swimming in it?
They go swimming in the water.
Yep.
And then it's not just, like, they tell stories about, because I think they visit the Holy Mountain guy, who if you've seen Into the Wild, what's his name?
Oh, it's
Emil Hirsch.
Yeah.
He stops at this mountain where they painted all these prayers on it and everything. That was a real place. They made him tear it down eventually. I think they made a documentary about him, too.
I think they did. I think they did.
They talk to that guy, and they talk to this nudist who lives down the way who just always stands on the side of the road holding a sign that says, honk your horn for Jesus or something like that. And it's just all these interesting characters who could end up in a John Waters or a David Lynch movie.
And you could, it's funny, before this documentary and everything, I saw the movie The Salton Sea,
yeah,
the DJ Caruso film with Val Kilmer.
Which I really love. Yeah.
I love this movie. And I think that's why I keep going back to DJ Caruso films, is because I'm like, oh, I want the guy from The Salton Sea. And sometimes you see it. Sometimes you're like, oh, it's right there. This is so good. And sorry, my nose itched. And and it's just like, I want him back. I want The Salton Sea director back.
I feel like the part of the reason that movie was so good is because you had The Salton Sea to base it on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
that subject helps.
And in that movie, you see a lot of, it's about meth and about, yeah. And driving in Salton Sea, you see a lot of trailers and you're like, definitely maybe they're making a little meth, maybe?
Meth and deterioration.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
Because it's also intercut with a lot of the old footage when they were trying to pitch it as this sort of better than Palm Springs because they have this body of water.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I need to see that one.
Cool, cool, cool pick.
And you don't want to go ahead and talk about yours?
No, you can go. Okay. You're next.
Okay. All right. Oh, man, I pressed the wrong button. Hold on. All right, my number five, I saw in my AP environmental science class. Environmental science, yeah, that's what it was. And it's like what pretty much got me into documentaries. I, like you, Kevin, I wasn't really into documentaries until later on in life. I'm actually just now, like, catching up on a bunch of old documentaries that I missed. This one's from 2005, and it's Grizzly Man.
Oh, so good.
It is really good. And it was perfect for our senior class. I mean, it was my senior year taking this class. So when you're not really thinking about anyone else but yourself senior year, you know, you're like, I'm on top of the world, whatever. This, like, totally is exactly what every senior needs to bring them down to reality, pretty much. But it's so good. It's a movie about a guy that pretty much takes this bear, grows up with this bear, not grows up with the bear, but the bear grows up with him, and he does a documentary, like, once a year. He goes and lives with this bear, and he, like, names it, and he loves it, and it's about the bear and the wild and all this shit. And then right at the end, he decides to finally bring his girlfriend or fiance or whatever she is with him, because she's so against him going once a year to do this. I don't even know how many years he was doing it.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But
it's been a little while.
The one time that he brings his girlfriend with him, the bear kills all of them.
Well, it's because they stayed longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were, you know, normally he left because it was like new bears were there too.
Yeah.
Normally he left when they would migrate, and then they stayed longer, and then shit got real.
Shit got real.
I mean, watching some of the footage of him with the bears recording his old camera, like, what the fuck are you doing, you dumbass?
Yeah.
But the thing that really gets me in this movie is the fact that their death is recorded, and just the only person at one point who has heard it is the director, and the family's like, well, we kind of, there's like the scene with the family and they want to hear it, but it's just like, why would you want to hear that? I mean, just, I don't even know what.
Yeah. I still haven't seen this movie.
You haven't seen Grizzly
Man?
No. It's on Instant.
I should watch it.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
It's a Werner Herzog, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's intense for sure.
Oh, man. Yeah. I got to see this movie. Kind of
This guy's crazy.
It's one of those movies that I know I've heard the story and I know what it's about. So it's just kind of like, oh man, I don't kind of. It's kind of like watching Faces of Death when you're like, I'm gonna watch people die. You know what I mean?
But you're not gonna watch him die.
Yeah, you're not gonna actually see them die.
Yeah, still, you don't even hear him.
Still
die.
Though, same thing, man.
You kind of hear it, don't you?
Yeah, there's a you hear like a very faint sound of it, but the director's smart enough not to
put like the yeah crazy parts.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah, but it's crazy. He was just obsessed with these bears. It's very intense. But more power to him. I wonder how many years he was doing it.
But it's a really good character. I mean, you really explore this guy and you really get to know him really well, and it's just a really good character study.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, I got to check it out. And it's on Instant, so I could watch it maybe tonight.
Yeah, they put a bunch of documentaries on Instant recently.
Yeah. I think this is like documentary month. So so for my number five, I picked documentary Bombay Beach.
Okay.
Which just came out this year, last year, I think. Yeah, let me look it up.
I don't think I know anything about this movie.
I don't know anything about it.
It's basically about Bombay Beach is one of the cities on the Salton Sea.
Okay.
And it's on
right,
the...
Right. Is this the one that got flooded?
Like, yeah. So if you go to the shore, the town's kind of... It keeps moving up because it keeps getting... Well, I think it's not moving anymore, the shoreline, but... But yeah, like half that town was underwater, and then there's still the last half that's still there. And the first time I went, this was before I watched the documentary, I went with my friend Stuart, and we went to Bombay Beach, and literally no one comes out of their house. Like, it looked like it was abandoned. For a while, I was like, oh, shit, we could just shoot a movie here because it's abandoned. And we didn't see anybody, and we drove through the street. And it's a big kind of, not big, it's about, I want to say, square blocks. It's about 10 by 15, you know, like small little like blocks. And we drove literally through every little street on there just to see if there's people there, because we were kind of freaked out that there was nobody there.
It's like you're in an episode of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah, exactly. And we, for a minute there, like, I was like, did the zombie apocalypse happen? And you see this in movies, and this is how a horror movie starts, and maybe we shouldn't be here. For like a split second, I was genuinely scared. And then I started seeing people like through their windows and stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, there's people who live here. And it's mostly, it's one of the documentaries about this town, Bombay Beach. And it's about the fact that it's one of the poorest cities in California. Poorest towns in California. And it's just how like, people kind of get stuck there, and people that are going to retire and they don't have any money, they'll just buy a trailer and go and live there. And it's pretty sad. I mean, and just like the kids that live there, because there's some kids that live there, and they're sons of the people that that move there because they don't have any money. And it's just sad to see that these kids, you hardly even see schools, And the documentary is about their lives and stuff like that. And it's pretty sad. And, it has some cool music on it. And it's kind of, I don't know. It kind of makes you appreciate what you have, I think. Just because
it's not as fun as Plagues and Pleasures on the
Soul. Yeah. Side. Yeah. No, it's not fun.
It's just Plagues.
Yeah. This is like the downer version of that movie,
And,
I enjoyed it, and it's got some music on it. I think, I don't know if I might have seen a really, really, really early cut of it that wasn't really. I don't know what I saw. I saw it. Somebody gave it to me, I think. And then I saw that it was out on Instant. And it was an Instant now. So you could check it out on Netflix right now. But it's kind of a downer. Yeah. I don't want to see it ever again.
It's on Netflix?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's your favorite that you never ever want to see again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to go check that out tonight and then cut my wrist.
And watch
Bob's Burgers.
Bob's.
Will Melancholia make you feel better after seeing this movie?
Probably, yeah. So start with this movie, then Melancholia, then Bob's Burgers.
Wow. I don't know if you'd make it.
Maybe
Bob's
you should
Burgers.
Watch some episodes of Bob's Burgers in between.
Yeah.
Just to kind of cheer you up a little bit. And then watch Melancholia and then finish out with Bob's
Chappelle
Burgers.
Chappelle Show.
There you go.
But yeah, and actually, it's funny because I always thought, like, when I visited it there and then when I saw the documentary, I'm like, wow, I want to make a movie based on this town. Like, it's just like, how about like like just kids growing up here, like their dreams and their wants, like, you know, like it's just kind of hard, like, to get out of here. Like, how do you get out of here? There's like a bar and there's like a store, but you got to drive a long ways to get to, like, you know, a chain grocery store, like Ralph's. You're going to at least drive 45 minutes mm-hmm. to get to Ralph's.
I remember in Plagues and Pleasures, they're talking, like, the one restaurant that was still around in the movie, it closes.
Yeah.
Like, they have the closing of the, shop, and it's like, all right, well, now we have no restaurant.
Yep.
And, like, it was a source of employment also.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like, these kids, like, there's no jobs, there's no nothing. I'm surprised they have running water. I'm just surprised they're able to live there, period. And I don't want to ever revisit that documentary. But it's
well, you've sold us.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. But I think that's why it's good. I think it's one of those movies where you watch and you're like, man, I live in the palace. You know, like, I got 300 channels on my TV and I got central AC. I'm doing all right. Do you know what I mean? But yeah. So anytime you're like, oh man, work sucks. It's like, well, I have a job. You know. And I have a roof over my head that isn't, like, all rusty and, you know, leaking water. Yeah. I can actually go get food. I could walk to get food. So, yeah, that's my number 5, Bombay Beach. Sorry for taking us to a dark place, guys.
Yes, thank you for that. I feel very cheery now. Okay, so my number 4, it's the oldest film on my list. Most people listening to this will go, oh, I fucking heard of that before. Why is that on your list? 1976, it's Harlan County, USA. This movie is amazing. What Barbara Coppola does she captures the life of this mining town during the strike, and she does it so well. She does ask questions and inquire at times, but sometimes the camera is just hanging out, capturing life and capturing elements of the strike. I mean, this is a strike that lasted 13 months for people that are already, I mean, even when the mine is open, they're poor and they have to live in these shanties that are houses that are being run by the mining company. And just kind of how you go through the whole story and you learn about the unions of the mining, that handle the miners. You learn about the mining company. You learn about the miners themselves. You learn about the whole strike process and kind of have to stand together as one and be united, and how some people were like, yeah, I'm all about striking, but I'm not going to go hang out on the picket line. And there's only 4 of us. But yet the wives of all these miners will then go hang out on the picket line and lay in the middle of the road so that scabs can't go through and work. And just kind of how it progresses and the violence that comes out and how guns get brought out. And at one point, a young guy who has a 16-year-old wife and a 5-month-old child takes a shotgun blast to the head. And they've got this one shot where they're like, yep, there's brains right there. And she's photographing, like, this little spot of where his brains are on the pavement.
Wow.
Yeah, this movie is amazing. It really makes you feel for these people and what they go through and how much life sucks for miners. So it not only goes to the strike, but then it starts talking about black lung and how we're the only country that, you know, because it costs money, isn't going to work on ways to try to make sure that the health of the miners, even like for their futures, and so that they don't die at a young age of black lung. We're the only country that isn't trying to find ways to fix that, whereas Australia is proud to say, yeah, I think we've gotten rid of lung disease in our country.
Wow.
And it's all about how the rich get rich and the poor get poorer. And how even people who are supposed to be representing you, like the president of your union, is a dirty bastard. And when he feels like he might be getting, when someone is running against him, he has their family murdered.
Wow.
And it's just very, it becomes almost like a mafia in a way. And it's like, what the hell? I mean, you're supposed to be there to help these people and you're the president of the union. And then because the people are speaking against you, because you're not doing anything for them, the guy that is saying he's going to do something for him, he has him murdered. But then the guy who ends up getting elected, in the end, the movie really shows that no matter what somebody says to get elected, in the end, you know what? They fall to the system and they end up screwing you over in the end as well. I mean, yeah, they may help you out a little bit, but they're also going to screw you too.
Yeah.
It's really good. There's this amazing scene that every time I watch it, I get goose flesh, the hair on the back of my neck stands up, and it's this older woman. And so the guy who takes a shotgun blast to his head, it's at his funeral, and she's getting up and she's crying, and there's these two guys standing next to her, and she can't get next to the casket, and then she just faints and passes out, and they have to pick her up and carry her off. The scene is so, I mean, it's perfect because the camera is just hanging out. It's not right up on them. It's hanging back. It's a really intense scene. The movie is amazing. They use original music from, because there was a strike in the 1930s that was like one of the bloodiest strikes ever. A lot of people died. And this woman who was a part of it at the time, named Hazel Dickens, wrote a bunch of music. And they use a lot of her original music in this film. And the music is great. It's really just coming from the soul. I'm really coming from a blue collar person that is just one of the regular people who was a part of this and just speaks true throughout the lyrics. But it's a really good movie, and I really highly suggest, just if you want to be a documentary filmmaker and you want to learn how to, maybe you don't want to interview people all the time, you're trying to figure out how do you capture life, just watch this movie and just see what Barbara Kopple does, because she does a great job.
Wow. This was one of those movies that I always, like, I should watch this, and I never got around to it.
I was the same way, and they push it on you in film class, and I was like, well, I'm going to ditch that day. It's the documentary. And then I just sat down. I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this movie, and I sat down and went, holy shit, I see why people rave about this movie. It's really good.
Well, no, I got to watch it. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
You're welcome.
And it's a downer.
Yeah, you just got way real on us. I just did a substitution on my list because it's like, I don't think I can follow Harlan County, USA with the King of Kong.
Oh, no, you have to follow with the King of Kong. That's an awesome movie.
It's not actually, that's an honorable mention, but that wasn't what was going to be next. All right, so my number four is from 2001. I feel like I can enjoy this movie, but at the same time, it's kind of scary and unnerving. It's Hell House.
Oh, this movie is so frightening.
So it's about this church in Texas that every year for Halloween, instead of doing a haunted house, they have started this thing called a hell house, where it's essentially, it's a haunted house geared towards getting people to convert to Christianity. And they address all of these. The way the filmmaker found out about them, I feel like, is he saw an article about them. Because the year of Columbine, so April, 2099?
2000, yeah.
So that year, that October, they did a Columbine section in their Hell House.
Wow.
Talking about how that was the devil's work, and if you don't go to Christ, then you're going to go to hell. Yeah. And like that's the haunted house ends with people with this like conversion room, where they stop you and there's two doors. Like, all right, so if you go through this one door and you haven't accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, you're going to go to hell. If you go through this other door, there are people on the other side of this door willing to talk to you and help you come to Christ and save your soul.
What happens when you go through the hell door? Do they, like, beat you up or something?
They don't beat you up. I mean, not physically. They glare at you and they're like, they just want to be like, they want to make sure. Yes, they stone you. They give you some really intimidating looks. Like, are you sure you know where you're going to go if you walk through that door? It's like, so like people who are in the church, it's so frightening to people that people who are already in the church and have dedicated their lives to Christ, whatever you want to call it, they still go in to the room with the people who are going to talk with them and to like help them get closer in their relationship with God. But
so a lot of people go to this.
Oh yeah, they get huge crowds. They get on the news.
A lot of people just going because they're like, oh, I just want to see what it's about.
A lot of people do, but at the same time, a lot of like, it's a mega church, so they already have a huge congregation of people who they know are going to go.
And all those people are going to go every year, anyways, even though they've already.
But it draws. They get ridiculous attendance numbers. It's crazy. They have like truckloads of people that they. It's a church event in Texas. You're going to get a lot of churchgoers because, I mean, and it's a church sanction. That's the whole thing. Because, I mean, I grew up going to church. And so we would have Halloween festivities.
Mm-hmm.
But when it was sanctioned by the church, it was like Harvest Festival.
Right.
So it makes it all okay.
Right.
But wait, have you seen this, Kevin?
Yes.
Yeah. So they build it up and they have auditions.
Wow.
And like these people like just screaming bloody murder in these auditions. And like the stories of the people involved. some of the stories that these people are telling directly to the camera, it feels like something written by Tom Lennon and Ben Grant, where like it's out of Reno 911 or something. It's like,
and then you realize these are real people.
These are they just say these really disturbing, messed up things that you can't help but laugh awkwardly at because of how messed up they are. Because they're like, they believe them. And just like the weird delusions that they're in, and just their misunderstanding of things in general. At one point, in one of the rooms in the haunted house is supposed to be a devil worshiper, like a Satanist room. And instead of painting a pentagram, the guy paints the Star of David, and he thinks that it's his right.
Wow.
Yeah, he's like not maliciously. He just doesn't know.
He just
mixed it up and painted the wrong thing. It's hilarious slash
scary
slash infuriating. They have a police officer who works with them because they do things with live guns. They have live guns in this haunted house full of people with nothing like between, like they're as close to you as I am, or as close to each other as I am to you. The audience is in there in this room with people with live guns that they have blanks in, but still you can kill someone with a blank.
Yep.
You can make someone go deaf with a blank. And the guy, like, when he's demonstrating, like, this is gun safety. And he has the guy hold a piece of cardboard in front of him and shoots it with the blank to illustrate it. But it's just a dude. He's not wearing anything protective. He's just some guy in a t-shirt. He's like, here, hold this piece of cardboard. And the guy shoots it at point blank range. And he is their safety advisor for their guns. And then there's this.
He's like, hold this apple in your mouth.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, on your head, I'm going to show you my William Tell trick.
Yeah.
And then there's a side story with this family where like the daughter of the family is going for like the lead, like the abortion. It's really kind of despicable things. So they talk about like abortion. There's at one point they have a group of kids who are chastising them. They have to like call security and be like, what the fuck? I've got gay friends. You're saying the gay people are going to go to hell and blah, blah, blah. And very confrontational. But one of the scenes is like this girl who's like cursing God, and it's just, I can't even put into words all the terrible things they put into this.
Yeah, you really just have to see it because it's you don't realize that this is the way that some people think and that they're willing to put this out there. And it's just like, you people are awful.
Well, I realize that this is where a lot of this I'm watching. I'm like, I remember going to church with someone like you.
Yeah.
I recognize this sort of blind devotion and acceptance of. And it's crazy. And I'm going to say it again. I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but this and Jesus Camp for a while. Like I had my Halloween trilogy of documentaries. Wow. I would watch this. I would watch Jesus Camp, and I would watch Devil's Playground.
Oh,
it's just like scary Christians.
I love Devil's Playground. Isn't Devil's Playground
that's
the
one about
the Mormons?
Rumspringa. No, it's Quakers.
Yeah, the Quakers.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah,
Devil's
Playground
you're right. Crazy.
You're right. No, I've seen it. I wasn't sure if it was
crazy.
But yeah, this and Jesus Camp are the most similar, where it's like the crazy blind devotion children
speaking
in tongues.
I'll go ahead and say it. My number four is Jesus Camp.
Okay.
Since I'm next, I'll go ahead and say it. Yeah.
Well, then if you like Jesus Camp, you need to see this movie.
Okay.
Because it's messed up.
Yeah, Jesus Camp is crazy too.
I mean, with both of them, just the fact that they're getting these kids, and these kids who are just so blindly devoted to saying these things.
Yeah, mostly because it's kids. Mm-hmm. Like the whole fact that it's for both of them. I'm assuming that's mostly dedicated for kids to go through a haunted house kind of thing. You know, it's just like they're training these kids so young to do this. It's just, yeah.
Well, let's talk more about yours, because at this one, it's not just. It's a little bit different the way it's scary, because it's the people leading them also. I don't know. It's a little bit different. They go together very well.
Yes.
But in Jesus Camp, when they're talking about these children being the army for God, and
next Billy Graham
and using Palestine as a positive example, like, oh, if only we could get our kids to be like the Palestinian kids who are willing to sacrifice themselves for our cause. That's really unnerving and scary and frightening.
Oh yeah.
And all the other synonyms for frightening that I can
think of. When people in America are looking to the Middle East as an example, I think something's gone wrong with those people, maybe?
Yeah.
You know.
Just that whole warrior, at war mentality in Jesus Camp is very, it just makes me very nervous.
When the kids start talking in tongues.
Tongues, that's
speaking in, children speaking in tongues.
The shit out of me.
That's out of a horror movie. Those some of those scenes are like, it's scarier than horror movies.
Yeah. So my updated horror list. Well, no, I did it for my 24 Hours of Horror this last year. I had Jesus Camp and Hell House, and then Red State. Like they, I feel they go very well. Very well with each other.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah. I gotta watch. I've seen Jesus Camp, but I haven't seen Hell House. So
I really like watch Hell House. Them together. They're pretty.
Yeah.
Oh man, I don't know. That's almost too much. Yeah. I bet.
Well, then you can watch Bob's Burgers. Right. Bob's Burgers Hell Show. Yeah.
God, yeah, no, Jesus Camp is fucking crazy. That one woman that's like in
the leader,
yes.
They had to cancel that camp because of the movie.
Really?
Yeah, because of Jesus Camp.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's no longer in business.
Why?
Because of all the negative publicity, all the negative feedback they were getting back after the movie. Like, what is wrong with you people?
Why was she letting them do it then? If she thought, or did she just didn't think they were going to get negative feedback from it?
Yeah, she wasn't thinking that what they were doing was bad. Okay, so then when a bunch of people who look stand back and go, nope, that's pretty fucked up, and then you go, oh.
Is she in hiding now?
I don't know about that. I just know that the camp went out of business.
Yeah.
I
bet she has. At least
according to
Wikipedia somewhere.
Last time I
checked. I wouldn't be surprised if she sprouted another camp somewhere else.
Jesus Camp Part 2. Pete, Paul, and Joshua's camp. I just named three random Bible names.
Yeah. Okay.
Pete, good stuff.
Pete. Yeah. Good old Pete.
Yeah.
Pete's camp. Pete's. You're like, are you guys affiliated to Jesus Camp? No.
Pete's no, Dragon? We're just this nice summer camp. Bring your kids here.
It wasn't actually called Jesus Camp.
It wasn't.
No, yeah. But no, I've seen this movie and it's pretty frightening. And I think it's funny because things like that scare me more than horror movies do. Because there's people out there that are...
That really are that, like that.
That's
yeah.
not a character. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like some... There's some lady there who's that crazy.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, you know what? Like, I'm not... well, I won't say anything. But, you know, like, I don't... I try not to judge people until they judge you. Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like the people who are... fucking assholes are people who these are the worst types of people. People who say, "Well, no one could judge me, but Jesus." Oh, you're the worst kind of person. Then, like literally, like I know people who say that.
People who say that while judging other people.
Yeah. Yes.
It's like no one can judge me but Jesus, but I can judge everyone else.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And exactly those are the worst type of people because those are the people who are like, oh,
I don't know if they're the worst kind of people, but they're up there.
They're pretty bad, they're, but not,
I would say they're the worst kind.
Worse than the Nazis?
I'm sure the Nazis said that too. They're like, hey, okay. Only Jesus can judge us, okay?
Only Jesus can judge us.
The Nazis are about Jesus.
Yeah. They're all, only Jesus can judge us.
That was like Borat.
Yeah. all my impressions sound like Borat. But I feel like those people are the ones that are like, oh, well, gays, you know, they're going to go to hell. Well... You don't want to be judged, but you're judging maybe a little bit on the gays, maybe.
Yeah.
And also they're the people, and also too, just on Facebook, like you'll see like favorite quote, like blah, 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 and then like some, you know, like you'll see something like their favorite saying or something, and they're like, well, only judge, God could judge me, you know, I don't like to be judged. I see that too as like status updates on certain girls, and those are the worst. Like you're like, I've seen you do horrible things. I've heard you do horrible things.
Whoa.
And you're I'm outing people on Facebook.
Welcome to the polarizing episode of the List Film Podcast.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I don't wish to see that movie ever again. Just because it's scary to know that those people are out there, and yeah.
There's something about a room full of children speaking in tongues and weeping. The weeping, the weeping and wailing, and like technically, as far as I'm concerned, that's the end of the world because there's children, there's gnashing of teeth and weeping and wailing, and children speaking in tongues.
These children are speaking like they're adults too. Yeah. They're like speaking just like that woman. Like they'll say exactly the same things. They won't say things like children say, like "Oh my god, they're such a fun time."
They've been brainwashed.
It's the most ridiculous. Yeah. Oh my god! If I saw someone speak in tongues in front of me, I would freak out. It's never happened in front of me, but I would absolutely be like, "Oh my god! I have to get out of here."
I've seen people speak in tongues, and like people passing out.
If those are the people that are going to be in heaven, I don't want to go to heaven. I'm like, I'm good.
I'll stay down here.
Yeah. I really want them. I know Red State is kind of off of that family. What are they? What's
oh,
the family?
The Phelps?
Yeah, but I really want them to do a documentary on the Phelps. Oh, is there
There's
really?
A documentary about the Phelps family.
What's it called?
I don't know.
Is it like recent?
You know what's so funny is I was listening to the Adam Carolla podcast and he was talking about how I forgot what he was out doing like his show. I forgot what state it was. And he's like the Westboro church was out.
Yeah, that one.
They were picketing him. He's all, and literally next to them was GLAD as well. They were picketing him as well. So he's like, they were literally on the same side picketing together.
There's a couple. There's Fall from Grace is the one and Anatomy of Hate. Those are the two that I see on Netflix a lot. And then there's
oh,
one,
really?
I think, just about Fred Phelps.
Are they recent?
Yeah, 2007 and 2009.
Oh, okay. I need to get on that.
And then, I mean, he's also in Small
Town
Gay Bar.
That family interests
briefly.
The shit out of me. They're all over Twitter, tweeting from their Apple products how horrible Steve Jobs is. I'm like, oh my God. That family interests me so much. I have no idea why. Just... I gotta know more.
I like Kevin Smith when he talks about the Red State and how he invited them, and
yeah,
it's really funny stories that he tells about how like she didn't want to go to the screening and then she called and asked for more tickets.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, they left early also.
Yeah.
Because of the swearing.
Yeah.
Right.
whoa! We love the content of it. It's just
We don't curse. Yeah. We'll do everything else, but not that.
So that is your number four.
Yeah.
Sorry. Ooh, somebody didn't like that.
They know already.
Yeah.
They're onto us now.
We might want to wrap this up quickly.
The Phelpses are outside protesting.
So my number four is from 2003, and it is the movie called Step into Liquid. I love this movie. It's just, you know what, this one and
Dogtown.
The Dogtown Z-Boys were kind of fighting to be on my list. And this one's just so cool. It's about Laird Hamilton.
Yep.
And him growing up and about surfing. And you know what? I've never been into surfing. I don't even know how to swim. It's just, but this movie, if any movie kind of makes you want to swim and surf, it's this movie.
Oh, definitely.
Where you're like, it's just, and it's kind of like, you know, you realize that some sports are like, they're like an art form. Do you mean? Like it just takes, I don't know, it's just hard to put into words and articulate. But he makes this, Laird Hamilton makes surfing look like art. If that makes any sense.
No, it's beautiful watching the movement and just watching a person just flawlessly float on a, like, ride a wave.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really is. It's really amazing to watch.
And it's kind of like watching somebody play, like, a master play guitar.
Yes.
Like, just like, oh, wow, like, that hits something in me, like, emotionally, you know? And watching this documentary, I was, like, emotionally, like, kind of like, oh, wow, like, I didn't know I could get this way about surfing, and it was really well done. It talks about him growing up and kind of like his stepdad, and it made me feel good. Yeah, it made me feel like this is one that's fun and it's positive.
Yeah, I'm glad you have a feel good movie on your list, at least one.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's why I picked it, just because it makes me feel so. So does Lords of Dogtown, but not as much as this movie does. It just makes it's an uplifting movie and. It's fun, the people they interview. And
this is the one where they end up showing him like doing where he takes like the wave runners out and he does like the really big waves, right?
Yeah,
which
correct,
is insane.
Correct. Yeah. Some of those waves, you're like, oh man, like how are people going out there? And who was the first guy to be like, you know what? I'm going to take this wooden board and I'm going to go out there and see what happens. And be like, yeah. And his friend was like, not like, I think you're going to die, maybe. And he's like, no, let's see how this plays out, you know?
And like, dude, have you ever just wanted to, you know, ride a fucking wave?
Yeah. It had to be somebody who's really high.
Oh, obviously.
Who's like, man, I just want to
I want to be in the ocean. I want to be part of the wave.
And it's just such a fun movie and just visually cool. Like, and I think I got to see it on Blu-ray. I saw it on in theaters and it was amazing. But I imagine, you know, with Blu-ray and stuff, it's going to look really, really cool. So. Check that out. That is my number four, Step into Liquid.
Sweet. I'm going to bring it really down again.
Uh-oh.
I'm serious. So this film is from 2006. I saw this film when I was working at the Arclight. It was part of IDA, which is what the International Documentary Association, which is a very cool association. Again, if you have a documentary and you want to get it screened, this group, if they... definitely feel for your documentary. They have like a festival for 2 weeks where they make sure that your film gets played every day at different rotating times so you can get nominated for an Oscar.
Oh, wow.
And that's how I saw this. They were screening at the ArcLight because they were doing their two-week thing. And the film is called Deliver Us From Evil.
Ooh. You took us to a dark place, dude.
I did. I did take it to that. But this movie, I will start cursing at the reason it's on here is because this movie makes me start cursing at the screen, makes me feel for these people. And I mean, it makes me go through a whole range of emotions. And then I just start yelling at the screen again and saying, what the fuck? Why are these assholes allowed to be in charge of the LA part of the Catholic Church? So anyways, the film is about a priest who over, 13, 14, 15 years, something like that, is moved around different parts of California and molests children. And instead of taking him out and getting him psychiatric help, no, we'll just move him 52 miles away to a different town and then he can go molest children there. And it's just
When did they decide to move him?
When someone goes to the church and reports it. They're like, you know what we'll do? We're going to take him out of the church and we're going to get him help so that way he won't molest children. And the parents are like, okay, you know what? We trust you. That's what you're going to do. And then they just move him 52 miles away and put him in charge of a different congregation. And, I mean, you see interviews with the families who were friends with this guy. And the one family who starts it off... the Jeongs, who were friends with him the longest and didn't know. And at one point were taking him in when they were moving him around and he raped their daughter the longest. I mean, from age 5 to 13. And there's this one scene that really gets me all the time because it's the father when the father and mother find out. Because the daughter never says anything. And the reason she never says anything is because at one point when she was younger, her father said, if anybody hurts you, I'm going to kill them. And so when she was with her friends, she was like, what would happen if someone killed someone? And you're like, well, they would go to jail for the rest of their lives. And she was so afraid to lose her father that she did not say a single thing because she knew her father would kill the priest.
Yeah.
And the father just, when he's telling the story and when he's telling the story to the camera, he just starts breaking down because he takes on all this blame and he's like, this is my fault. She would have told me if I hadn't said something like that and he wouldn't have raped her for 8 years.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have allowed him into our house, all this stuff. And I mean, so that's just the stories around the families where they show different families. But then when they start talking about the higher ups and the bishops who would move him and how, when another priest who is actually trying to help these families and trying to get reparations from the church is explaining how what their belief is how they think they're better people than the commoners and it's okay to move them around because we're better and we need to get higher up in the church. And the fact that the Pope that is sitting in Italy right now, who freaking George W. Bush pardoned and said that he can't be sued, and he was part of a cover up as well of covering up all this crap. It pisses me off. And then it really makes me feel for these kids who can't have normal lives for the rest of their lives. I mean, you have the one woman who's now 40 who's like, you know, I'm not married. My father will never walk me down the aisle because he can never go into a church again. You have the kid who talks about every time he gets close to a woman, his mind goes immediately back to the fact when this priest raped him and sodomized him. And and then the part that really gets me is when they're interviewing the priest and he's in Italy or in Ireland, and there's this one part where he's 10 feet away from a church because in Ireland, you don't have to report the fact that you went to prison for molesting children and raping children. And he's talking about, he's like, well, if someone were to tell me, do you find a woman attractive? A man attractive? Do you find a little girl attractive? A little boy attractive? Okay. A little boy or a little girl in a bathing suit? Oh. A little boy or a little girl in naked? Yeah, as a little boy is walking behind him. And then there's this one part that really pisses me off when he writes a letter to every single child, every single adult that he raped as a child, saying, you know, I want to get together with you and I want to talk to you and I want to apologize to you. And he's like, I hope to see you soon. And he winks at the camera. And I just want to jump to the camera and start pummeling his face because the guy is so disgusting.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, this it's a really, really good documentary by Amy Berg. And she did the new West Memphis one that Peter Jackson produced. So I really want to check that out. But, I mean, she really just captures the families and the people, and then just really just shows how awful, not only this disgusting priest is, but the Catholic Church is.
Yeah. I think there's no other religion that pisses me off more. And it's funny because I grew up Catholic, you know. I grew up like, and the thing is, like, it's funny because I as a kid, like, I grew up uber Catholic. Like, I was like an altar boy, and like, I'm so glad I was never touched. Like, my priest was super cool, and like, every day, like, every time I hear somebody like, oh, somebody else was touched by a priest, I'm like, oh my god, I came out clean.
Yeah. You know?
And yeah, I think that's the religion I have the most problem with. I mean, I have problems with every religion, but especially Catholics, because so many things have, I still can't believe they have so many, you know, worshipers, you know, followers of Catholicism, because all the shitty shit that's done in the name of the Catholic Church, you know, like the Spanish Inquisition, they didn't do shit during the Holocaust.
Oh my
god, I'm blanking out here. During the Holocaust, they didn't do shit. They were just like, all right, well, we'll just stand here and just let you do what you got to do, and then, you know, and nothing. They were just like, and then this thing. Now it's been happening for years, and it's, no one's ever done anything.
Yeah.
And,
well, you say every time we've watched this. How many times have you watched this movie? Because once was enough. I've watched it. It's very good.
I've watched it 3 times because, you know, I said in the episode's not going to air, I'm a horror for documentaries, and I like studying in them. And yes, even though it does aggravate me, and I feel sad and I tear up, but because I love movies so much, I want to study this and just embrace her filmmaking style.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. But
it's an excellent film, and I mean, I probably would watch it again, but I would never. I need to prep myself.
You know, yeah. You definitely need to prep yourself.
It's a tough yeah. watch, yeah. And like, he's free.
He's free. Yeah,
he's walking.
I mean, yes,
free.
He did go to prison for what, fucking 7 years. But yeah, he's free roaming around Ireland in this movie. It's like, you got to be effing kidding me.
Yeah. I could say some horrible things, but I won't. I want to not be hated by our listeners.
The one thing
I think
that
would be pretty polarizing already.
Yeah. One thing that gets me is when Father Doyle, who's the good guy in this and who is a priest and has been a priest for many years and who's actually trying to help these families out, is talking about how the whole like celibacy thing came about. And it wasn't in the Bible. It wasn't, this is what God said you have to do. It was, a lot of the first priests had kids and they had sons. And what they would do is they would pass their fortunes on to their firstborn. And then the Catholic Church went, oh, wait, we could get that money. Let's make them all celibate. So then when they die, their money has to go to us.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you guys are money grubbing assholes.
Yep. That's true.
So much for not alienating more.
Sorry, I'm not saying anything about Catholics. Catholics, there's a lot of very good Catholic people out there, but the church itself.
Hey, my grandparents are Catholic.
The church itself.
So are my grandparents.
There are a lot of awful people who are running the church, not the actual people who are participating and going to the church.
No, I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with Catholics, even people who go to church. Like, I mean, just on like a. Like a basic, I mean, some of the. Some
hey,
of
how about number three?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's not
go into that.
Because, yeah, this will take us into
like, I always say,
a 2-hour.
There's
rant.
Some people in the church, not the whole church, and a lot of people that go. I know a lot of people who are very.
Yeah,
good
no, you know, there's exceptions to every rule, and yes, I agree. Let's move on. We're done talking shit about Catholics. Some of them are jerks.
They are.
I don't know if this is going to come
not
off
talking
as
talking shit about Catholics.
So it's funny or not after all this. So my number three is F for fake.
Nice.
Oh, great. So we went from really dark to Orson Welles.
A nice fun documentary.
Yeah.
About fakery and trickery and lies and deceit, which I guess works dovetailing off of your last movie. Orson Welles just talks about just the art of lying, basically. And he talks about magicians and he talks about art forgers. And he talks a lot about Clifford Irving, who's the guy who wrote the phony biography of Howard Hughes. And it's just this fun little movie where he's playing tricks with the audience the whole time. And he tells you at the beginning that half, like an hour into it, he's going to start lying to you. And you forget. And then so it gets to a certain point, he's telling you another story. And then he's like, oh, yeah, by the way, that was all bullshit. I just lied to you.
Yeah.
None of this happened. And you have to like figure out what's real and what isn't real. And like all this stuff about Clifford Irving is true. He really did get people to buy this quote unquote autobiography that he ghost wrote about Howard Hughes. And there's a story about...
Which they made a movie about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was it Richard Gere?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I never saw. Because I don't know. I don't see it as being as fun as just the footage of Clifford Irving in this movie, in F for Fake. And then Clifford Irving also hangs out with this art forger, this famous art forger, whose name I can't remember for the life of me. Elmir Dori or something like that. Some French name that I can't pronounce. I think it's actually Hungarian. And it's just this really fun movie. If you like magic or art forgery, or if you're into heist movies, you'd probably enjoy this.
I really like this movie.
And it's just Orson Welles sitting around with his big, like Orson Welles in his later days, sitting around smoking with his big beard and talking about everything that he likes.
Yeah.
And it's a fun documentary.
This is definitely a fun documentary. And if you like cons, and I'm really into that, that intrigues me that, you know, that the con man really, really intrigues me. Just the fact that most of these people like run double lives.
Yeah.
Like they literally, their job, their whole second job and even second family is the grift. You know what I mean? Is the playing this game and how people like live like full lives and they have grown kids and they're like, you know, you later find out like, you hear a lot of these stories where like, oh yeah, turns out my dad was a con man for years. We didn't know. We just thought he sold insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And the people like that intrigue me, and this documentary is really cool. I really love it. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
I'm glad we took a turn.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Turn for the light.
Yeah.
Okay. So my number three. It's not bad. It's not like bad, but it's Waiting for Superman.
Oh, it's a good one.
And it's not like super super depressing, but it's a little bit depressing. And a lot of people don't know this that are listening to the podcast, but I graduated with an art education degree, so I have that education background. I could, you know, be a teacher in Georgia right now if I wanted. This one really kind of hit me, I guess, just because of the whole education system is just kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie really goes into that. And A lot of people were complaining about it because it said that it talks shit about teachers, but it really is just like talking a bunch of crap about the education system in general and like how it's really, there needs to be some things that are changed in the education system pretty much. The movie kind of goes along and explains the lives of, I think, five kids or their families or something like that. And kind of talks about they're each in different types of, education systems. Kind of, there's, you know, the public system, and there's some that want to be into like magnet programs and stuff like that. And it's them trying to get into certain schools because their schools that they're currently placed in because of where they're located are kind of really crappy schools, and they're really worried that they're not going to make it into college or whatever. Their parents are already worried, so they want to go ahead and get them into these schools. And it's a whole bunch of lottery systems and different ways of trying to get these, you know, kids into school systems. And it's just kind of heartbreaking because in the end, it's the truth comes down to it that it's really hard to get into any school that you actually want to be in. And it's a really good story on the education system that you'd be surprised how many people don't know anything about our education system at all. And this movie just really brings it to light and shows you like, you guys need to, you know, put more effort into this shit.
am I the only one here who hasn't seen it?
No, I've checked it out.
I have not seen it.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's on Netflix, so I'll give it a go. But
my
roommate's a teacher, so I do hear a lot about what it's like to be a teacher. Yeah. But she's also, she works at, her school is a charter school. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I have a friend who is a teacher, and I've known him for years now, and he was an acquaintance that became a friend. And when he first, I kind of met him like after his like first year of teaching, and he was like really gung ho about like, you know, like I kind of want to like be a teacher and kind of be like the teachers that inspired me, you know, to like, cause like he kind of grew up in a kind of like not kind of a bad neighborhood, and he kind of like persevered. Like he went to a really good college, and he wanted to be a teacher to kind of go back and inspire kids. Like, hey, look, I came from this same neighborhood, and look at me. Like I'm here a teacher. I went to college. I'm a graduate, and he was really like happy to go to work, and you know, and I started to see that as that. I always kind of blamed to me like. The reason, like, I hear, like, in the news, like, oh, that, you know, America is, like, you know, like, in the bottom of, like, the education system. I used to blame, like, teachers when I was really young. And, well, I had some teachers that were, like, you know, they weren't interesting or they didn't make things interesting for me or they weren't good. But, you know, watching him and just watching, you know, just in general watching people, I started to realize that, like, every year that went by, he got a little bit bitter because after, like, his second year, he wasn't tenured, so it was he would always get fired at the end of the year. And then right before school started in September, he would get rehired in a different school. So every year he started to get bitter and bitter. And right now I think he's on his fifth year, and he wants to be done with it. Like he's to the point where he's under 30 years. He's like 28, I think. Yeah, 29. And he's like, I kind of just want to join the Air Force or just like not do this at all. Like, he's like, I don't want to. Wow. He's like, I already got fired for this year and I don't want to go through that again. He can't really have a family. He can't really buy a house. He can't really live his life because every year he's getting fired and he doesn't know if he's going to get hired back. And I went from seeing him being like really enthusiastic about teaching kids to now resenting kids. Like, he's like, fuck these kids. Like, they don't listen to me like in the school. And like, you know, I try my best. I try and try. And like, you know what? Like, fuck it. Every Friday now, he just shows fucking movies. That has nothing to do with what he's teaching because he teaches history. And I'm like, the school
did
system.
Did he ever Waiting for Superman?
You should. And now I see that the school system is what the problem, not teachers. You know what I mean, like, mm-hmm. Most teachers, like, they're not there for paychecks because they don't get paid very well. You know that going in. Like, they're not well paid. So you go becoming a teacher, you gotta just do it for the passion. Like, hey, I like to work with kids and I want to be a positive influence, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I also know the flip side of that, where I feel like I remember when I was going to school, a lot of people were like, oh, I'm just gonna get my teaching credential on the side because that's easy. Like, fuck you, that's not easy.
Oh yeah.
No. Being
yeah.
a teacher is not easy. Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna care about it, if you're gonna be a shitty teacher, sure, then that'll be easy.
Yeah.
But I just all the number of people I would hear talking about, oh yeah, I'm just gonna be a teacher.
And you start seeing too, and I also blame I think a lot of the reason we have shitty students is, I think, because of parents. It's so easy. And the biggest thing is, like, that, I mean, I was an okay student, but my parents were kind of on me. And it was never, my parents never, every time I got a bad grade or anything, it was never the teacher's fault. It was always my fault.
Well, there was no way that I was going to drop out of school. Yeah. There was just no way. My parents would, I mean, not that was... It just wasn't even in my head because my parents would absolutely kill me.
Yeah.
And it's terrible that the parents out here are actually... There's parents that let their kids just do whatever the hell they want. Yeah.
And I think...
That's terrible. It's completely on the parents. And I agree completely.
They started doing this and they started doing this and I totally agree with it. And I'm with it 100%. Is that every time a kid ditches, the parents should get fined. Every time, so, and they started doing that now. Like for
do
like
you know
five
how
truancies?
Much money my parents would be fined. I have already cost them a lot of money if they were charged for every time I didn't go to class.
But well, think about it. That would hurt
back
them.
Back then, we didn't
that
have like a certain amount that we had to. Yeah. Like now, there's like a certain amount that you can't miss. Even in like in my college, there's a certain amount that we can't miss of schools of classes. Yeah. But yeah, so there's that. That's the only reason it's changed so much, especially with the new. No Child Left Behind bill.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they give those awards for kids who didn't miss any days of school. There was an award for the opposite of that. I would get that award. I missed a lot of school.
And you know what? The truth is, I wasn't a very good student. But the thing is that, like, I think I could barely name, not even one hand, the teachers that kind of did inspire me. But I remember the teachers that did do that for me. I will remember them forever. I mean, like, just because it's like, oh, I totally didn't get that, but you somehow explain that to me. So I totally fucking get that.
Well, the exact opposite of your friend. There's so many teachers, and I'm not talking shit about teachers by any means, but there are a lot of teachers out there that are on tenure and shouldn't even be in the system.
Completely. And that's what he says. That's why he's not getting
tenure, because there's all these really crappy teachers that are taking his place.
And he's like, there's a lot of teachers that are about to be retired in a couple of years, and they're just kind of phoning it in. They don't really do the work.
No.
And they're just teaching for the test.
Mm-hmm.
They just literally teach so the kids will pass the
and that's why test? the CRCT or whatever that is. Yeah. And that's why the principals keep them around, because they do what they're meant to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they inspire the kids. They do what they're meant to do.
And I feel like the list turned into an NPR.
Sorry.
We're sorry.
I just think it's that's I feel like just documentaries just bring it out.
I think so. Let's talk about the issues.
Yeah.
Next on Fresh Air.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so yeah, you should definitely go see this. Yeah. I think everyone should see this because it's a very important subject that people don't know shit about.
Yeah.
And I think
because they didn't have great school experience.
But you know what? It's funny. The thing is that I think that's teachers and students stuff. That's a problem that affects. It's funny because you think, but kids are stupid. Screw it. But no, it's like it affects. That's why there's a lot more people in prison. That's why a lot of problems are caused because of that. Mm-hmm. Like just because, like kids aren't being guided the right way, and you know that's where most of the problems start. Mm-hmm. To be honest, that's where I think
you don't plan on having kids in your lifetime, this is gonna somehow affect you.
Oh yeah.
Not to harp on this same joke, but I do really feel like the title of this episode shouldn't be documentaries. It should be a very special episode.
It should be.
I have to say the one reason I immediately wanted to go see this movie is when they were going through like how in the United States we tested the bottom of this and we tested the bottom of this and we tested the bottom of this. But you know where we score number one? Confidence. Confidence.
Hell yeah.
And obesity.
Yeah.
And obesity.
Oh, I want to see that new obesity documentary on HBO.
I haven't seen that.
Like The Weight of America, I think it's called, or something like that. Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. I have to look into that.
Okay.
But yeah, no, definitely. Like, I feel, and also I feel like just we're so entitled. I feel. I don't know if that.
We're America.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I won't get into that rant. What's your number? Where are we at? Three?
You're number three.
You're number three.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Really?
So maybe you will get into another rant.
I'm about to go into another rant. But my number three is from 2003, and it's Overnight. I think we talked about this slightly.
Yes.
Yes.
Before. I was trying. I don't know. I was actively avoiding having documentaries about movies.
I could. I had to put one on there.
Yeah, I have to put two. Just because it was so inspiring for me. And this is inspiring in the way of things not to do. And for those who don't know, Overnight is a documentary about director Troy Duffy. He directed Boondock Saints.
And Boondock Saints 2.
Yeah. Well, which happened years after Boondock Saints. But anyway, so basically it's Troy Duffy. He gets a deal with Harvey Weinstein where he sells a script, and he's going to make this movie, Boondock Saints. Harvey loves the script. And Harvey loves the script so much that he even buys him the bar that Troy Duffy's working at. He says, it's a gift. I'm going to buy you the bar and give it to you. So he buys his bar, gives it to him, and he says, just chill out.
It's that pub over on Fairfax,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And you start to see, and this documentary is made by his friends, which is always surprising me that it just surprised me that he was like, yeah, cool. Just
I'm guessing
me.
They're not friends anymore.
Though. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And because in the documentary, don't they talk about?
I think they do. Yeah,
yeah. And so basically, his friends are just filming from the beginning. Like he just kind of brings them along, and they're kind of documenting his life, and you get to see that. How that old adage of like, hey, if you're an asshole, it doesn't matter whether you have money or not. You're still, you know what I mean? It doesn't, money doesn't make you an asshole. It's just that you were an asshole all along. It's just that no one really saw it, you know?
Well, I feel like it also kind of exacerbates.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, that's what it's called. Yeah. Like you become just overnight success and it goes straight to his head.
Yeah. It goes right to his head. Yeah.
But I think you had to have that sort of attitude from the beginning, and you know, he just didn't overnight.
He is an American.
Yeah. There you go.
We are. We are the best.
Yeah, the best around. And so it's just so good to see what, and I mean, it's such simple things, like just don't be a jerk to people. Talk to them like normal human beings. Don't yell at your boss. Things that are common sense, but this guy kind of...
He became a know-it-all.
Yeah.
And I feel like the moment that most clearly illustrates that for me is when, after he's got the deal, and he's still yet to make the movie, I believe,
yeah,
and he's working on his record also.
Yeah.
And he's talking about it like he's... Like, they had a pretty well-known producer, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, someone who well-renowned. Yeah. And Troy is telling him, like, how... He's like, this is the way it is. This is the way things really work.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do, and this is why it's going to be amazing, because I did it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that clearly... It's like, all right, well, that's who you are.
Yep.
That's...
And
the core.
Yeah, and you know, this guy went from having, like, basically anything he wanted to.
He like, came in on the Tarantino's coattails.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Right up after Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction.
He was, like, dubbed the new Tarantino.
Yeah.
Like, and to have Which all that ridiculous. Power. Yeah, I mean, even Tarantino's overrated. but to have that power, you know, as not even your first movie, like you're about to make your first movie.
Yeah, he hasn't even made it yet.
Yeah, and to have that power to be like, yeah, I want to meet with this person. Oh, done. Like that, and you know, to go from that to like no one wants to touch him. Like now, like he barely got Boondock Saints.
I still don't understand how that got made at all.
Yeah, and I think it was all he sold all the overseas rights to it first, and then that's how he got the money.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it was all pre-sold before, you know, before it was made. So I don't think he'll ever make another movie. I honestly don't think. It's just that's how big of a hole he dug for himself, and I don't think there's any way out. And it's a really good cautionary tale, and it's things you know already, you know, just hey, common sense stuff. But you just kind of seeing it in practice and seeing it play out, it's a really good what not to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my number three.
Cool. I'm gonna bring it really down.
Oh my god, Kevin, what are you doing?
My film is from 1991, and it's a documentary about a movie that I love, and it really just shows how difficult it can be to make a film that you really want to make. And the movie is called Hearts of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Yes. Apocalypse.
Yeah.
This film is amazing. I love Apocalypse Now. And watching this, it makes me appreciate and love it even more, which is kind of hard because I love the film and I think it's great. But just watching Francis Ford Coppola and the whole crew and Francis Ford Coppola's wife on this journey of making this film, and kind of what everybody goes through and how it starts off as like, oh, it's only going to be 16 weeks of shooting and now we're at day 200. And showing how hard it can be to work with an actor who's got a big fucking head and doesn't do any of the research and promises to lose the weight and doesn't lose the weight, and how a writer-director has to kind of rework things to work with this actor. It's that stuff's really interesting, especially since that's so far into the journey. But even just getting to there and listening to all the actors and talking about how, yeah, I was taking LSD and then during that scene I was high on speed because I wanted to be, we were shooting long nights and I wanted to have that edge. And then what really makes me really appreciate the opening of Apocalypse Now is where the scene where Martin Sheen is in the hotel room and they're showing that scene and how Martin Sheen is talking about, you know, I was so drunk in that scene, I couldn't like stand up at times. And when he's doing the kicks and the punches and he doesn't realize how close he is to the mirror and he breaks the mirror and Francis is like, oh, hey, we got to get a doctor. And he's like, no, I want to keep shooting. And he's smearing his own blood all over himself. And you're really just watching this actor break down and just really connect. And, just seeing how you can capture beautiful moments. I mean, going through some really crazy messed up shit it's a testament to art and filmmaking. And if you really want to make something and you believe in it, just keep going at it. And I mean, this is a testament to anybody who wants to make movies. Watch this.
Yeah,
this will show you how difficult it can be to make a movie. How, yeah, it says you originally in the beginning you think you're going to make it in 16 days and you're going to have a final script, and how at a certain point, you're going to be changing so much of the script and rewriting so many things. You're going to end up working with a difficult actor who's trying to get all this money out of you. But in the end, if you believe in it and you have a really brilliant idea and you put your soul and your passion into it, you can create something amazing. Even if along the way you're thinking to yourself, this is a big piece of shit. This is going to be the worst movie I've ever made in my life. Just stick to it and keep putting your heart into it, because you never know, because you could make Apocalypse Now. Because if Francis Ford Coppola thought he was making the worst movie of his life at a certain point, the recordings, just the audio recordings that his wife got that he didn't know about are amazing. Just listening to him go off and talk about the studios and how they're reporting back to the world and the press that, oh, Martin Sheen had a heart attack. Yes, he did. Let's not tell people about that, because I don't want people to know that, yes, he had a heart attack while shooting this movie. Yeah. But it's amazing. And every time I watch it, I have to then go watch Apocalypse Now afterwards, because it's awesome.
I think that's why I respect Francis Ford Coppola so much. And I think, lately he's done a couple things that I'm not a big fan of. But the thing is, that he gave us such great films that him experimenting nowadays doesn't bother me. That's how much he loves cinema. That's what he was willing to do. And I think this is a documentary that made me just everybody that I know that's an actor, and I know a lot of actors, especially guys, they fucking love Brando. And this is a movie that made me lose respect for him completely. Like, what he did, yeah, he changed acting, but fuck, who the fuck cares? You're a fucking dick. You're an asshole. So it doesn't matter. It's just, I don't know. It goes beyond the things he does in this. Made me lose respect for him as just an artist. Do you know what I mean? Which is worse. I don't care what you do in your personal life. Do whatever the fuck you want. But just as an artist, I think that's when you lose someone's respect, I feel like it's, especially if you're an artist, I feel like that's the worst thing you can do. It's just wow, I don't have any credibility. And just the things he did and the things he asked for and the things he didn't do that he said he was going to do.
Yeah.
It's just, it made me he could be the best thing in the world. But the thing is, if he didn't have a good director, he was never good. He wasn't good. There's his movies that were shitty outweigh the movies that were good. So that's his career. He's no hero right, of mine.
So you've pissed off Catholics, Brando fans,
yeah,
Christians, yeah, teachers, maybe?
No, teachers. I was
some tenured teachers.
Tenured teachers. Yeah.
That don't deserve it.
The school system.
All right. Let's see. And we're on number two. So we've still got seven more movies.
We got about five more groups of people.
I'm going to give you another group right here. Are you ready?
But so does anybody else have anything to say about? You haven't seen it, right, Jenny?
No.
It's a great movie.
It's a great movie. Yeah. His wife did this documentary.
I had read about it, and that when I was going through my list of documentaries that I still need to see, and I'd read about it. I was looking for it. It's not on Netflix.
I'll loan it to you.
Yeah. And also, awesome. I really loved if you own Tropic Thunder. They meet a fake Heart of Darkness, and it's pretty funny. You should check it out. And it's all about Robert Downey Jr. and how he moved in with this African-American family. And you see the family, and they're just weirded out that has them living in his hotel room. And it's a really funny documentary, and yeah, you should check that out. And the flip side of that. But yeah, cool documentary.
Okay, so number two. This is a new one. This is from last year. And another group for you to maybe piss off.
Bring it on.
It's the Black Power mixtape.
Oh.
I've never heard of this.
You haven't? Oh, my gosh. It's so good. I saw the trailer for it early on, and I was like, I have to see this movie. The full title is The Black Power Mixtape, 1967 through 1975. And all of these Swedish television documentarians had come to America in the 60s through 67 through 75 and were just filming American life and ended up following a lot of the Black Power movement from 67 to 75 and they hanging out with Eldridge Cleaver and Stokely Carmichael and Angela Davis. And it's a really interesting sort of window for people who aren't black into the black part. I think everybody should watch this movie to get a better understanding of what it was like or what it is like to be black in America, but especially what the black power movement was like. But having this sort of proxy of the Swedish film crew, being so removed from it, from the American culture and from African American culture, they kind of are your doorway into the experience. And it's a very fixing title, Black Power Mixtape, because it's just like, it's to pique your interest. It's like, all right, here's these and this and this, and like, here's Stokely Carmichael, and here's Eldridge Cleaver, and here's Angela Davis, and all these little, like, greatest hits of the Black Power movement, and hopefully it will make you more interested and want to read more and learn more, and just different ideas that people are unaware of, like CIA-supported drugs, like, coming into the ghettos and just to keep Black people down, and because that was sort of how they quelled the Black Power movement. It was like, all right, well, they're getting too much power. They're becoming more of a formidable force. So let's find a way to push them down. And heroin and crack and cocaine kind of helped do that. And that's one of the things that they talk about. But they talk about all these other about political prisoners and like the good things that the Black Power movement did. And they talk about Malcolm X and Louis Farrakhan, and it's really, really interesting. It's from last year.
I haven't seen it. I've heard about it. I just haven't seen it.
I'm going to go and try to
find it. It's on Instant.
It's on Instant.
And it's really great. It's going to make you want to listen to a lot of good music, too.
Awesome.
It's a great movie. Everyone should check it out. I don't care what color you are.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely check it out. I've heard of this movie. I just never got around to it. There's so many movies on my fucking list of movies to watch. Damn it.
Yeah.
Damn you for giving me another one.
You're welcome.
Damn, yeah. But I'm going to go home and watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was from 2012?
2011.
11. Okay.
All right. So my number two is an uplifting one. It's The Pixar Story from 2007.
Ooh.
And I absolutely love this movie. I love everything about it. I've seen it a couple times. It was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is. But I love the Pixar company. I love everything about who brought it up, where it started, and this movie just explains everything that you could possibly know about or want to know about them starting and how they differ from Disney and where they're located and who started. I had no idea that Steve Jobs was part of the main people that started Pixar, so that was really interesting. And
Lucas before him.
He was the one who actually started the company and sold it to Jobs.
Yeah, and they were like BFFs at CalArts or something, which is one of the schools that I really wanted to go to for a little while. So that's really interesting, and how now they're like fighting 3D and all this stuff, and how that's really interesting, seeing a 2D perspective compared to a 3D perspective, and I don't know, animation in general really interests me, just because I'm an artist, but animation's really fucking difficult. Like, that's not something that I could possibly, it just doesn't compute in my head to how to do that on a computer. And I love computers and I love art. So seeing how those two things are combined is just one of the most interesting art forms for anyone. And so, I don't know. I really love this movie. It shows you everything behind the scenes of all the really awesome Pixar movies that there are, and I cannot wait to see Brave, which is coming out soon.
I still haven't seen this.
It's good.
I haven't seen Cars 2, and I refuse to see it, just because Cars 1 sucks.
that's fine.
Right?
Did you see it? No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. I didn't either.
I love, because you were just talking about like computer animation, I love when they were talking about what they referred to them, the old men, the guys who were the original Disney, and just talking about how they had to do all the hand drawings, and then like going into like doing hand drawings and how difficult that is. And being like, how the fuck do you do that? Because that has to take so much time.
The hand drawing stuff?
Yeah.
My roommate in film school, for one of our projects, he was like, I'm going to do animation for one part. And he did.
Holy crap.
He hand drew all of these scenes. And just watching him do it was, I couldn't believe all the time he spent on it.
I love when they show like behind the guy's shoulder and they're like flipping up the pages to see like this scene goes to this scene and this is how he's going to move his arm this way. It's so interesting.
And also how they start, I liked how they, when they explain like the layers, how they would use like, the perspective and it's really, really cool. And I had one of my friends too, he did animation and he showed me like, he's like, yeah, this took me like 6 months and it was like 3 minutes. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And so you see like the effort, and it was traditional animation. So you see like, I don't know, it's really like inspiring how like I find it harder than regular filmmaking, just because you have to have that, not only do you have to have it in your head, but then already edit it in your head, because once you start drawing, it's very hard to like, oh, you know, I don't like this. Well, give us 2 more months and we'll figure this out, you know?
I mean, I did a shitty 30-second claymation clip. And
I didn't find it shitty. I was just talking to Jenny about it. For film school, Kevin did a short film, And part of it was in claymation. And I remember because he lived close to where I used to live. And I'd be like, oh, let's go see a movie. And he'd be like, give me another 5 hours. I need to do another 2 seconds on my movie.
It took forever. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it and definitely experienced, but it took forever.
Yeah. I did a claymation in middle school once, and that was with an old school VHS camcorder.
He did it on Super 8.
Super 8. Ooh, with each
one.
Just,
yeah.
And there's no, you can't fuck up.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's film, you know, so.
God. Yeah. That sounds crazy.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this movie. You should see it. It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it still is.
I don't think I've seen it on Netflix.
I think it's gone.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was on there for a while.
But it's great. You might even be able to find it on, because I think it's originally showed on Stars on Demand.
Yeah, it did.
And that's the first place I saw it was on Stars on Demand. And because I was like, oh, Pixar story, you got to watch this. I love everything Pixar.
Yeah.
And just like John Lasseter's story and how he started off cleaning Disneyland parks.
Yeah.
And then kind of moved up. That. Yeah, and now he runs one of the best studios in the world.
It's so inspiring. Absolutely.
And that was your number two?
Mm-hmm.
So my number two is from, let me see, I think it's from 2002. And it is Bowling for Columbine.
Good stuff.
I like
this was really
Michael
close
Moore.
To being on my
and
list.
He's just really entertaining. And yeah, some stuff is inaccurate, but he's funny. He's entertaining. And I think a lot of the documentaries we talked about today are really inspiring because it's another form of filmmaking. Do you mean? And which I find I can never, as much as I admire documentaries and documentary directors, I can never do that. I just don't know how you see it.
A different kind of filmmaking.
Yeah, it's a different kind of filmmaking, and just like animation is different. Like it's just
a very different skill set.
Yeah, and
because you have to find your movie.
Oh yeah. Like you could have a theme or something, but you could or a subject, but you have to. It's almost like you find it. You make the movie. The directing part of it is in post.
Yeah,
is in editing.
I can't remember who said this quote, but someone said that if you finish your documentary with the same ideas you had about everything, about your subject from when you started the documentary, then you didn't learn.
Yeah.
Like you didn't do what you set out to do.
Yeah.
It's the learning process. And it's really, I work for a documentary filmmaker and it's a very interesting process. And then watching him go from documentaries to fiction, it's a whole different beast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Harlan County is directed by Barbara Kopple. I mean, she went and did Havoc, and I go, really? But I can understand it is a completely whole different beast to itself that you go from making documentaries to making a standard straightforward story. It can be completely different.
Well, yeah, capturing reality and recreating an interpretation of reality.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, Bowling for Columbine is Michael Moore and tries to find out. It's about the Columbine shooting, and he tries to find out, you know, talks about the community, their upbringing. It's kind of everything, like, you know, gun control, all that stuff. And it's done in a really entertaining way, and he always entertains me. No matter what subject he's talking about, it's always, oh, I didn't know that. And he always has, I like his humor. I like that he brings humor to such, like, sometimes really grim like topics.
I take his documentaries as more entertainment
and
less information.
Yeah.
Like he's giving you his, again, with the whole documentary being a different beast, his documentary is a very personalized kind of documentary where you're seeing it very much through his eyes.
His filter,
filter.
And I mean, he narrates it and he's in most of his documentaries and you're seeing it through this guy's eyes and you're seeing this version of it. If another filmmaker who has different political views made the same documentary, it'd be very different. And you kind of narrowed down. He's an entertaining documentarian, which I enjoy, and that's why I put it as my number two. He's really entertaining.
I haven't seen Capitalism.
I haven't seen it either. Too,
right? I haven't. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Sicko I enjoyed
a lot.
I think I've seen Bowling for Columbine. I've seen Roger and Me.
Roger
and
Me's good.
I've seen Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that one either.
Yeah. So that is my number two.
Cool.
Nice.
Okay. So my recap. 5 was Dogtown and Z-Boys. 4 was Harlan County, USA. 3, Deliver Us from Evil. two, Hearts of Darkness, Filmmaker's Apocalypse. And number one, I just love this movie a lot. It's from 1994, and it's Hoop Dreams.
Yeah.
This is just a terrific movie. And I mean, it's a three-hour documentary, but it's one of those movies that I'll be, at some point, maybe like once a year, I'll just be like, you know what? I want to watch Hoop Dreams just because it's so well done. You're following, the basic plot of the story is you're following these two boys, William Gates and Arthur Agee, and they're in the inner city of Chicago, and they get this chance to play at a school that has a really good basketball program, and it's just it's a really good school that takes them out of the inner city, and they're basically getting like scholarships and a chance to play there because they have they're very talented at playing basketball. And it follows them. And the interesting thing, while I was researching this, this movie was actually supposed to be a 30-second or 30-minute short on PBS. And it ended up filming for 5 years, 250 hours of filming, and they now have a three-hour-long movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they got so involved and they started seeing not only the kids but their families. I mean, Arthur's father is a drug addict, and just watching him interact with with Arthur and with Arthur's mother, and just how this kid has to grow up in this and survive and do well in school and try to do well at basketball and just progress and move further in his life. Meanwhile, he's got this father who's just awful. And just how they have to balance schoolwork, because if they don't do well in school, they're going to get kicked out of school and they can't play basketball, which could be their ride to go to college. And that's like the main thing, is them. They want to get to college because no one in their family has made it to college. And if you get to college, you can, if you do well in college, you can then go on and have a successful life. And so just watching these kids just struggle, and William, who is very talented, and he gets injured, and you realize how important, I mean, how crazy it can be, how you can depend so much on your own physical body and how it can take you so far. And then in 1 second, it can take everything away from you. And it's just a very emotional film, and it's really good. And you just really feel for these kids. And when they start playing, they show them every year as they're trying to make it to the national championships. Because eventually Arthur has to drop out of the school that he's that, the really good school, the really basketball school, and just go to a regular public school in the inner city. And watching William and Arthur still go at it and go through high school, and how they also are both trying, as basketball teams are just trying to compete for the national championship and the state championship. And it's, you just root along for them. And then you see as they get older and older and they make it to the senior year, they both are getting closer and closer to making it to the state championship, which is really hard to do. But it's a lot of fun. It's, really emotional. You really connect with these kids and you really feel for them. And it really just opens your eyes to a lot of what's going on in inner city Chicago, and just to the whole program and everything. And it's really, really, I remember watching this and going, that is, and just being in awe of how great this film is.
I have nothing to say. It's an awesome movie.
I've never seen it.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember just being blown away.
It's on Netflix.
And I'm not a fan of basketball, but this documentary definitely, like, you don't have to be a fan of basketball.
You
just
don't.
Just check it out. Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really well done.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. Yes. My wrap up. So my number five was Plagues and Pleasures on the Salton Sea. Number four was Hell House. Number three was F for Fate. Number two was the Black Power mixtape, 1967 to 1975. And my number one, a movie I just lent to Kevin, Bukowski, Born Into This.
So good.
I talked about this on the adaptations list, I think, about how much I love Bukowski. And this documentary, it gives you so many different layers of Bukowski, the man, and like the myth and the legend. That it's a cliched saying, but I mean, you get all these different aspects of Bukowski. If you are a fan, you'll love it. If you aren't a fan, it will probably make you a Bukowski fan. It'll make you want to read some of this stuff.
Yes.
I feel like it could have, if you don't like Bukowski and you see this, it might make you interested in, like, people who...
Who may have read his stuff and was like, nah, I'm not into it. I definitely see you watching this and going, you know what, I'm going to go back because maybe I didn't get something, and going back to read some more.
It could make you want to revisit it because you learn a lot about him and his life and his writing, and you just kind of see his writing through a different vein.
Yes.
And one of my favorite parts is seeing all the people who appreciated him and who knew him. Like, he hung out with Bono and Sean Penn.
Yeah.
But like all the different people who I enjoy their work, and they were also inspired by Bukowski, like Tom Waits.
Oh, wow.
Big one. And then Harry Dean Stanton.
Yes, Harry Dean Stanton. Harry Dean Stanton reading some of his poetry, and he does such a great job of reading some of Bukowski's poems, just because they just have him reading, and they're just showing clips of Bukowski, and it's great.
Harry Dean Stanton, by far, one of my top favorite actors, and just he himself does some poetry that's pretty amazing.
Well, and he's a really good guitar player. He plays like Mexican folk music really well. But yeah, just the cast people kind of illustrating his life, and then like the lesser known people, just these eccentric. So a lot of bizarre characters who look like they could have been in Plagues and Pleasures and at the Salton Sea. It's a great movie. If you like Bukowski, check it out. If you don't know who Bukowski is, definitely check it out.
Yeah.
If you don't like Bukowski, check it out and maybe you revisit him.
Yeah,
I love Bukowski. So.
I've only read like one book of his poetry, and I've read some of his prose, and I love it. And watching this and hearing some poems that I'd never heard of, and just listening to him read his own work is amazing, because just his voice and the way he delivers it.
If you've never heard his voice.
I wish I could have gone to a reading of his. I mean, yes, he's drinking like 5 bottles of wine and he's drunk off his ass, but he just the way he reads his own work is it's beautiful. It really is an amazing thing to see and hear. And just his writing style is like they say in the film, he did revolutionize something, and he took poetry away from the academics. And he does just a great job.
Cool. I gotta borrow that next then. Okay. Called Dibsies. Right.
And what's another thing that's great about it is it's cut from a lot of other documents. So you get pictures of him in different periods of his life, from like the where he's first becoming famous to around the time when he's dying, when he's passing away in San Pedro. Because all these different people, other documentarians who are visiting him, and they've cut pieces of these other films together. And it gives you a broad look at his career.
Oh, cool. I will definitely have to check it out. And I haven't really read a lot of Bukowski, so it'll be a treat to kind of be introduced to some stuff I've never heard of.
You're probably going to run out and buy a book of poetry.
Probably.
Okay. So, my recap. My number 5 was Grizzly Man. My number 4, Jesus Camp. 3, Waiting for Superman. 2, The Pixar Story. And my number 1 is from 2010, and it's Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Ooh, love this.
Nice. Yeah.
Honorable mention.
I love this movie. It's the other half of my art degree. It's the art part of it. So this also affects me greatly. It's a movie where this film guy, I don't know the word for it. Film guy. He's a film guy. he decides he wants to do a documentary on Banksy. And Banksy, right? That's how you say it. I always mix up the K and the S for some reason. Okay. And he decides he wants to follow Banksy around, and Banksy is a famous graffiti artist. Well, I guess he kind of wanted to film a bunch of different graffiti artists, not just Banksy, but
because he follows Shepard Fairey.
He was just filming everything.
He was just filming
everything that he went everywhere he went. He was filming.
Yeah, any person that he came across that was one of the art graffiti artists, and Banksy was like one of the most interesting to him because no one really knows what Banksy looks like, and it's a whole thing. It ends up being a movie on the filmmaker himself wanting to turn into an artist, and it's really interesting because near the end of it, it's really hard to explain, but he's not an artist at all. He's a filmmaker. That's it. And so he's trying to turn into this artist that he's not, and he takes other pictures and just adds things to them, and it's the epitome of hate of every artist's worst. Like, we as an artist, we hate people like that. Like, you can't just say you're an artist now. That's not how it works. Just like those people that buy Nikon cameras and are like, oh, I'm a photographer now. That's not how it works. And that's not it. You can't just take a picture and say, now I'm a photographer.
Well, it's like the commodification of art. Like, it's a product. He's just making these things to sell.
It's like DJs. Exactly. They're like, I'm going to take a cool song, and then you just kind of rehash it.
Okay, so Catholics, DJs, Christians.
I would not compare a DJ to
Mr. Brainwash.
His name is Mr. Brainwash.
But no, this is really cool because it's kind of it's just such a well done fucking movie.
It is, and in the end, he decides he wants to put in this whole gallery show, and it just falls to pieces because he's not an artist, and he doesn't know what the fuck he's getting into. And Banksy, like, even there's the, I can't remember what the quote is, but he says this really awesome quote about how you can't just, like, he has no respect for him at all, and he wishes that he had never done this documentary at all now, or something. I can't remember what the quote is. It's so good. But yeah, so it's really interesting and shows you how horrible some people are.
And like you're saying, like, it's like people who buy a camera and they're photographers, and it's just like, it's, you have to have craft.
Yeah.
And you know, there's exception to every fucking rule in the world, but this more so than anything, like, you have to know what the rules are before you can fucking break them. I like how people are like, yeah, so I'm gonna write a script. Oh, cool. So you read some books, went to classes? No, I'm just gonna start writing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you might get stuck in the second act, like, you know, here. No, I'm good. I don't care for rules. I don't care for rules. Like, okay.
It's fun to read those scripts sometimes, though.
I bet. Yeah.
Not really. Come on, dude.
I have a lot of fun with some of the shit that people give me to read.
Wow. And it's just the fact that, like, people,
you got to be trained in it before you can add your own flair to it.
The thing is, I always equate it to this. Would you want to go to a doctor who was like, nah, I didn't go to school?
I know. There's a reason that you guys went to film school. There was a reason that I went to art school. There's a reason behind it. It's not like I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, instead of getting a really important degree, I'm going to get an art degree and just see how it goes.
Yeah.
No, there's a reason behind that we get these degrees or we go to school.
The piece of paper doesn't matter.
Yeah,
no. Just
that you took the time to fucking know the rules.
Yeah.
Just that. Just, it's as simple as that. Like, hey, what are the rules to filmmaking? What are the rules to photography? Oh, okay, I got them. It's like kind of like I was talking to somebody, and it's exactly like cooking. Like, you could take a recipe, and you could be like, I don't want to follow the recipe. I'm going to just make, you know, and you could substitute ingredients, but it's not going to come out. Not until you know what each ingredient does. Like, oh, the cinnamon does this to it. And if I take it out, it does this to it. Oh, if I, you know, and it's like that with I feel like with every craft that's out there. That not until you know, like, oh, if you take this out of it, it collapses because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And not until you know those rules can you really start experimenting. Like, oh, I'm cooking, but I don't need this because just, you know. And you can start getting crazy with your baking.
I'm just thinking about the part in the film when he's become Mr. Brainwashed. He's got this factory of other people making everything for him.
Yeah.
He's like, I hate that.
Take
so
this
much.
And this and put them together. Yeah. Perfect. Good. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And the ungodly amounts of money that he made.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was at some silent auction and they were selling Mr. Brainwashed stuff and I just... It hurt my soul.
Oh, this is the quote that he said. Okay, it got... Because this is so, like, an artist to say something. I mean, like, anyone to say something that he wants people to join him. He said, I used to encourage everyone I knew to make art. I don't do that so much anymore. And that's so, like, yeah, you can't. I mean, you used to be, you could do it. Like, you could tell people, you should totally, like, try to get into photography. But you can't do that anymore with all these, like, people just having nice cameras now.
Yeah. Well, it's just... Yeah. With the technology for things being so much more accessible now, it makes it seem like it's easier to do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I have Photoshop. I know what I'm doing. It's fine.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. Like, to me, it's more interesting when people take a photo. If someone takes a photograph and then just doesn't fuck with it. That's like...
That's what photography is. That's how you're an artist, is you take it without... cropping, without, that's the composition right there. That's how photography used to be with film.
Yeah.
Was that's your end. Just like film and
it's one shot, one
film.
Shot.
Yeah, yeah. And movies. It's, you have to take it then.
It's okay, we'll fix it in post.
Yeah. Exactly.
We'll CGI it.
So many people depend on
we'll add a final character cut. Called Jar Jar Binks.
Good? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's a cool documentary and I feel like you're right. Like when I first started making like short films, I went from like, yeah, you just go out and fucking make a short film. Fuck it. Mm-hmm. To now like Nah, you shouldn't do. You shouldn't do it. Yeah. I'm less. I encourage people less.
Yeah.
Or what you do is you say, okay, I'm going to give you these two books. I'm going to give you about 20 scripts to read. Yeah. I want you to watch about 200 movies. Then maybe think about
then
it.
Then decide.
Yeah.
Then
I mean, it's also a really good movie on the on graffiti artists too. Yeah. Just going to throw that out there. The whole like beginning of it is like
oh, it's great.
Old is graffiti artist, and that's it's interesting to learn about the.
Yes, it's
too.
A really fun movie. Yeah.
I love the part where Banksy makes all that money. And he talked about how he wanted to just this, like hand out the money, and then he realized he can get arrested for counterfeiting because people started using it to purchase stuff.
And they were really buying stuff.
They weren't paying attention, and they were just and nobody was paying attention. And then people were purchasing stuff with this fake money.
Yeah. So my recap: number 5, Bombay Beach; number 4, Step Into Liquid; number 3, Overnight; number 2, Bowling for Columbine; and number 1, it's a documentary we just me and Adam just saw. Recently, and it aired on PBS, and it was the American Masters, Woody Allen. And I put it on here because it inspired me so much. Sometimes I get down, like, oh, my short films didn't come out as I'd like them to come out, or my writing isn't where it's at. And just watching somebody who's a master at it, like Woody Allen, and you know, it's somebody who I really kind of look up to, and I just all around, like, as a writer, as a comic. As a filmmaker, as a director, you know, there's so many facets of him that I admire, you know, that watching him like struggle at things, like being candid about like, yeah, I had a hard time and this was two movies and this was this and just kind of being like, okay, like, yeah, like I forget that people have, everyone has the same problems that I do. He has the same problems I do. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, like it was really inspiring. Like, okay, I'm not so far off until where I want to be. And, you know, it's kind of like, I feel like, I don't know how long we know each other. How long have we known each other, Kevin? Like, when did we meet in film school?
I've been on here since 2003, and we met in fall of 2003.
So, you know, it's been almost 10 years, and I feel not until now am I starting to discover who I am as a filmmaker, as even like, okay, it just, I'm comfortable with myself. Mm-hmm. I know who I am and I'm comfortable with myself now. And now I could become the writer who I am, not who I think I am. Do you mean? It took me a long time to get out of that fanboy phase. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this movie kind of re-inspired me to be like, oh, okay, I'm heading in the right direction. And okay, like just kind of just watching him like and watching him and his failures and what people perceive as failures and things he enjoyed and things that people liked and he hated was interesting. And so it was a 4-hour documentary on Woody Allen, and it kind of spanned his whole film career.
Yeah. And it's really good.
Yeah.
It should be on my list. Yeah. It's like the Bukowski movie for me is the same way. Both of these, they both inspired me to create after I watched them. This Bukowski's a little bit shorter.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah. And that's it. That's all I have to say about it. And you know,
it's a great movie.
And like, again, I like to say that just you know how much I admire filmmakers just for the fact that, like, even like Deliverers from Evil, like just the fact that she was able to get that. Put that together. It's just it's an amazing art form, and I think sometimes I for me personally, I tend to overlook it.
Yeah,
I tend to like take it for granted that how hard it is to make a documentary, just like how hard it is to make a movie.
That's one of my problems with Brian's top 10 of the year list, where he always excludes documentaries.
Yeah, and also it kind of, this is going to sound really horrible me to say, but I think that's why I don't
that's
like
the theme of this evening.
Yeah, I think that's the reason I don't like a lot of critics, if that makes any sense, just because I feel like a lot of critics haven't gone out and made a movie, and I think I appreciate things more, and I'm more lenient to things, you know, because I'm like, I know how hard it is to fucking make something. I know how hard it is to finish writing something, you know. So sometimes I'll see a shitty movie and I'm like, well, this is this and this was wrong with it, but this is kind of what he figured out, and that's interesting that at least he got that done. And you know, I'm a little more lenient towards movies, I feel, because I've failed at making certain movies that I'm like, oh, okay, I know how hard it is to just get a movie made, period. You know, how hard it is just to get people to come and, you know, and finish it from like writing it to editing it to being done with it. It's so hard, and it just, yeah, that's my thing about critics, and I that's why I tend, and that's why I think this podcast isn't like, we don't really criticize movies. We talk about how much we'd pay to go see them and stuff, but it's kind of more like a celebration of film, of things we like and stuff like that, and not more, you know. I don't like to shit on things just because...
We just criticize people?
Yeah, we just criticize people. We're really judgmental of people. Well, I am. But not, you know... I really admire the art form. And any art form, I really, really admire. You know,
except artists. DJing.
Except fucking DJing. Yeah.
Can we do honorable mentions really
quickly?
Yeah,
totally.
Yes.
Totally.
Okay, so I have Dig, the film about the Dandy Warhols and the Brian Johnstown
Massacre. Can you do it the other way, though? About the Brian Jonestown
and the Dandy Warhols.
Yeah,
okay.
Because I don't really like the Dandy Warhols. But Brian Jonestown Massacre is amazing.
It's great, even though Anton is crazy.
Yeah.
Super Size Me, great. It's the one movie that I will watch and it will make me feel sick because of all the fast food I've eaten throughout my life. Gimme Shelter, terrific movie. Capturing the Freedmans, awesome. I'm a huge, huge, huge Ramones fan. So, End of the Century, the story of
love
the Ramones.
That. Love
the film. Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, and Crumb.
You basically named all my honorable mentions. So,
Crumb is on the top of my honorable mentions list. I was really struggling with putting that one on the list. I really wanted to. And then these almost made it as a tie: Gonzo and Buy the Ticket, Take the Ride, the two Hunter S. Thompson documentaries. When We Are Kings, I really like. I also really like Four Little Girls, but that's just such a downer. I mean, I love it, but I don't
need
to watch it frequently. Dave Chappelle's Block Party.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Conan O'Brien Can't Stop.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
The Comedians of Comedy. Super High Me. The Kid Stays in the Picture. The King of Kong. And then from 1953, does anybody remember this old Disney documentary, The Living Desert?
No.
Where it was just like... They still make they did all those nature documentaries, and this is just them in the desert, and like you see like the animals and the sidewinder snakes, and there's a flash flood halfway through. I watched this thing all the time as a kid. I love The Living Desert. It almost made it into the top five.
Cool.
Okay, so I have Food Incorporated, The Cove, which is the one about the dolphins. That's super sad, but super hits you and makes it a good documentary. Super Size Me, Bowling for Columbine, Being Elmo, the documentary we were talking about the Elmo puppeteer, which ends up being really, really good and just as inspiring as Pixar Story.
Yeah.
The Parking Lot movie, which I just saw recently, and it's an interesting movie about parking lot attendants for this one parking lot. And Man on Wire.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Forget about that. Yeah. So basically you guys named all my, there's no need for me to go on. There's a bunch of other film documentaries that I enjoy, but yeah,
there's a lot. I feel like we could do a part two of this.
Yes,
how easily.
We will continue with a part two later on. So this will be part one of our documentary series. And we love. Apparently, we're really passionate about documentaries. We found out.
I'm a whore for them.
Yeah, and so find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're on Twitter at The Film Podcast. You could find us at our website at www.thelistfilmpodcast. Go ahead and tell us some of your topics. Give us suggestions for future topics. Give us your list of your favorite documentaries. We always love to hear that. We try to respond to every single thing.
And if you have something negative to say about Ricardo and backlash for him saying something negative about you, then let us know.
I don't care. If you're a Catholic hipster DJ, fucking send me your fucking hate mail.
A Catholic hipster DJ.
I kind of want to become that now.
I know.
So anyway, that is it for this week, and I hope you have a good week.